When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome back to Killer Fun, where we explore the intersection of crime and entertainment every other week. I'm Christy.
And I'm Jackie.
And we're so glad that you're back with us today. Today, we're talking about iZombie.
This was super fun. You suggested it, and I had never seen it.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I don't think that I thought I was going to like this when I saw it come out initially.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Uh-huh. Were you not into zombies?
It's not that. I think it was the play on the eye zombie, and I was like, oh, yeah. That was a stupid name. It was a stupid name, and if you couldn't come up with a good name, then I can't imagine the writing.
Oh,
so
but it's written by the people who did Veronica Mars.
Yes!
Which, of course, you hadn't watched that either.
I had
You didn't have a frame of reference to forgive a possible misname.
Right. I didn't. Yeah. So, yeah, it is pretty cool.
Yeah. Teen-geared procedural with a supernatural twist.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Super fun, but not just wholly supernatural either. Like, it's rooted in, like, a kind of a sci-fi version of it, which I kind of like.
I mean, it's sci-fi, but the science is really heavy. There's a lot less... there's not so much like space things going on as you get further into the series.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of like interesting science and things. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's what I love. I mean, when I say sci-fi, I don't necessarily always mean like space or anything like that. I mean, just science fiction.
Right.
And sometimes that's medical and sometimes that's physics and sometimes it's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's fun. As I mentioned, created by Rob Thomas, writer, producer, director, not the lead singer of Matchbox 20. We talked about that when we talked about Veronica Mars. Though, at some point in this show, I don't remember when it is, because I watched, I want to say, the first two or three seasons of this show while it was on, and then it just, there was a different way to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Than what I was accustomed to, and I wasn't going to go hunt it down.
Gotcha.
Like, we had, I don't know, Sling or something. Or I started on cable, and then we had Sling, and then it went off Sling, or we canceled Sling, and I didn't hunt it down after that. But they made fun of Rob Thomas, the singer of Matchbox 20. In this show, as well as in Veronica
Mars. As well
Mars.
As in,
super fun.
That's pretty funny.
Yep. And he also did the 90210 reboot. And he worked with Diane Ruggiero Wright, who was a writer and producer in Veronica Mars and this show, and Bates Motel.
I loved that.
Yeah.
See, that was so good.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
You didn't like it so much.
Yeah. I think we watched a few episodes and I had a hard time getting into it.
Man.
But I was trying to watch it with my husband, and I tend to be a little more critical of things when I watch with him.
Mm.
Like, if he's not into it, I might be like, well, maybe I don't need to watch this anymore either. Not because I am that easily influenced, but I'm like, well, if he doesn't want to watch it,
it won't be fun.
This is the kind of show that's more fun to watch with somebody else. And if I can't talk to him about it, I don't want to watch it.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
Because just recently, my husband and I were trying to get back into Handmaid's Tale. Because
mm-hmm.
he has not finished what is out yet.
Okay.
So it was like, okay, But every time he watches it, he's just not into it.
Okay.
But then it's like he tries to convince himself that he is. So this past week, I like literally went on the mission of telling him to stop watching this show.
Oh, there you go.
Because like I just felt like you don't like it.
I guess we'll just talk about it now. We're going to talk about the first episode of season 3 next time, because the next time we release an episode, the season 4 will have just premiered.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Yes, me too.
I'm so excited about that. So.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, iZombie.
iZombie! We really went on a thing with that. Okay, so yes, let's talk about iZombie.
So, Rose McIver plays Olivia Moore. She was in Once Upon a Time and The Lovely Bones. Malcolm Goodwin plays Clive Bavineau, and this is his meatiest role, but he's no stranger to procedurals. He's had small parts in the TV series FBI, Bones, CSI, Law & Order, and lots of other stuff. Raul Coley plays Ravi Chakrabarty. And he's in The Haunting of Bly Manor. Oh. We're not hunting a house. No. It's being haunted. Which was really good.
I haven't seen that. Oh, it was good.
It was the Haunting of Hill House was the first season.
Right.
And The Haunting of Bly Manor is the second season.
Okay.
Ooh, chilly, supernatural, like not crimey. I mean, a little crimey in that, you know, like people are dead, but
it's more of the supernatural
thing. Way more about ghosts. Robert Buckley plays Major Lilywhite. And I know his name is so funny.
I just can't with his name. Did you ever watch How I Met Your Mother?
No.
One of the little inside joke things is that every time they heard something like this, they'd have to go, Major Lilywhite, right? Like, and they'd have to like salute and they'd do this whole thing. And then it's Lilywhite and Major. Yes. And I feel like it's the wrong sitcom here.
And he's a Boy Scout and,
I mean, it's everything. This is so kitsch right here. It's pretty funny.
That's fair. He was on another teen drama, One Tree Hill, and predictably, with his classic good looks, he's been on more than one Hallmark-style Christmas movie.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Me too, because he's just so classically pretty.
Yeah, he's just, yes, exactly. He is Major Lilywhite, uh-huh. And yeah. Do you like those? Do you watch those, the Hallmark things?
Like, I have to be in a mood. I have friends who are like, what is the schedule for the Hallmark Christmas movies? Because I don't care that they all have the same plot and that the same 6 actors are in all of them.
Yeah.
They don't care, which is totally fine.
It's totally fine.
I like, every once in a while, I will put one on.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't like seek them out. I have to be in a mood. And I'm less and less often in the mood these days. Do you ever watch them? No.
No.
If you had said yes, I'd have been shocked.
Yeah, right? No, I can't even with that. And I think also, not only is it really not my style, but also when I am a Golden Girls fan. And anybody who is a big Golden Girls fan knows that the problem is that these stupid movies come on twice a year, okay? Not just at Christmas. They do their whole Christmas in July thing, too. And they kick the Golden Girls off to do all those movies. And so all the time for over Christmas, when all you want to do is, like, enjoy the Golden Girls and the Christmas stuff, and they kick them off. And so you know what, though? They're elsewhere now, Hallmark. So ha-ha-ha-ha-ha to you. Fiddle-dee-dee to you. So, that's that. So, if I didn't hate them enough, I'd be like, boycott anyway.
Fiddle-dee-dee to you is like that's the most like clean middle finger I've ever heard. Yes,
well, it's one of, it is a Golden Girls line. It is from there. I could just say, eat dirt and die, trash.
There you go.
Or 100 other things.
Oh, David Anders plays Blaine Beers. He was in The Vampire Diaries, so this feels a little on the nose for him. But he's also in Alias and Heroes, usually a bad guy. Ally Michaela plays Peyton. She was in Easy A, Phil of the Future on the Disney Channel, and something that sounds delightful called Ryan Hansen Solves Crime on Television. And it was a Hulu original.
Oh.
You know, for like Hulu Red, which was here for like a minute. Yeah. But now it's on Hulu.
Oh.
And we might have to like look at that sometime because it's a very meta. Ryan Hansen's a real actor, but he's playing a version of himself.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
Like a caricature.
Yeah.
Kind of like in, what's that one with the guy who played Joey?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the name of it, but that's what I thought of immediately. Episodes? Maybe it is episodes.
I don't know. I'll look it up and put it on social media. So, recap.
All right, recap.
All right. So, episode one, we watched the first two episodes.
Yes.
So, I'm going to just quickly cover some of the salient points.
Okay.
Liv is a promising young ER doctor with a perfect fiancé, Major. Major encourages her to attend a party. What's the worst that could happen?
Famous last lines.
Uh-huh. And she gets turned into a zombie.
So that is the worst that could happen.
Really, probably the worst that could happen. So 5 months later, we join her fiancé-less. She fears for Major safety. She's working in the morgue because she needs brains. And finding herself with an unexpected ally, her boss, Ravi, who wants to know more about her zombie condition and would very much like to find a cure, which I'm like, super cool.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. Uh-huh. Friends and family are really, really concerned about her, that she has PTSD from a boat party, this boat party where she became a zombie that was absolutely covered up. This whole zombie aspect of it was absolutely covered up. They think it's just like a wild party gone wrong.
Yeah, because there was a brawl that broke out.
Yeah.
So she was sort of injured and they knew that, I guess. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But she says it's more like post-traumatic ennui, which was really funny. And that was one thing I really appreciated about this over Veronica Mars is that there's this really witty voiceover. That's so much fun, but she's a doctor, very highly educated. Mm-hmm. It makes so much sense for a doctor to have this very mature sort of head
inner monologue.
Inner monologue, thank you. So if she eats brains periodically, she doesn't become the stereotypical mindless, aimless zombie. She gets a version of herself. Liv also gets flashback of the person's life. Of the brains she ate. So she eats the brains and gets a flashback of their life. And she takes on some of their traits, which is fun, actually. Clive Babineau is the detective working on a Jane Doe case. And the visions that Liv gets after eating a brain are very helpful. Ravi and Liv bill her as a psychic rather than a zombie for obvious reasons.
Yep.
And then the kind of procedural fun kicks in. So what you typically expect. So episode two, Brother, Can You Spare a Brain? A murdered artist provides our procedural component and allows us to kind of get to know the characters a little more. Liv looks for the drug dealer that turned her into a zombie at the party and eventually finds him, or he finds her, kind of ish. So Blaine, the drug dealer, claims to be on the straight and narrow now, and he's robbing graves for brains. And Liv agrees to help him with his dietary requirements until she catches him in a lie. Blaine's lying a lot. He's turning people into zombies in order to extort them for $25,000 a month in order to supply them with brains. Mm-hmm. So the procedural part of the show is interesting enough, but I really think the fascinating storyline is the twist on the mafia extortion part of providing people with brains with this overlay of zombies.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without spoiling it too much. That's as much as you need to know right now. So the show, it ran on the CW from 2015 to 2019. And listen to this, the genre, is kind of hard to pin down because they have it as comedy drama, crime, horror, and police procedural. Like, okay.
All yeah, right.
It's all of those all things. All of the things,
yes. Yes. And see, on Google, sci-fi.
Oh, really? Oh, that fits too.
It does fit too.
All of it fits. When Rob Thomas initially was approached to start this series, he didn't really want to do it. He was editing the film version of Veronica Mars, and he had attempted to pitch his own zombie show when AMC picked up The Walking Dead. Oh. So he kind of was like, oh, well, if they're doing it, then I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't want to flood the market with too many zombies. But they eventually talked him into it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this show is so different than The Walking Dead.
Oh, I mean, it's funny and light and not nearly as gory. And
yeah.
It's a very different kind of show. It was adapted from a comic book, if you're going to take umbrage with the name.
Oh, the comic
book? It came from directly from the comic book.
Well, I do. I take umbrage with it. Comic book, that was a dumb name, too.
It was a little earlier. It was started in 2010 on the Vertigo imprint of DC Comics. But the artists who drew the comic book did the opening title sequence and do the little transition scenes.
That's cool.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty cool.
I like all that part. It's really, it's really only the rip on the Apple name that I can't stand.
Yeah.
Because it's such a thing. And it just, it screams knockoff.
Well, and it screams knockoff. It screams dated.
It does.
Yeah.
It's so dated.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Sad. And it dates itself before 2015 when this debuted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate. In the comic book, Gwen Dillon is the heroine, and she's a grave digger.
Oh, well.
Yeah, not a doctor. So a little bit of difference. So that's why it's adapted and not based on, because they changed a lot of stuff. They took the ideas in some part and changed them to make it a more pleasing visual experience, I think.
You know what a phrase that they need to start using a lot is inspired by.
Yeah, there you
go. They just need to use the word inspired by, because they still can give credit, because they need to give credit where credit's due, and work with people, but just say inspired by it. Like, it covers all the bases.
Right.
Like, nobody expects it to be like the comic book or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But if you say adapted, you might mean adapted for screenplay, which can be very close to it or very different.
Right.
Or based on, can be very close or very different. Inspired by?
There you go.
Open door.
Yeah. It really kind of covers the,
it really the whole,
what it's happening here.
That's right. So Hollywood, if you're listening, do that now.
Yeah. Okay. Inspired by.
Inspired by. It.
Yeah. So early on, the reviews were pretty mixed. Some really liked it, like the Philadelphia Inquirer. In this article by Tear Dad, Derek Kashani said, unlike many of its CW compadres, post-teenage angst dramas that take themselves far too seriously, iZombie is delightfully ironic take on the horror genre.
I like it.
Yeah, because I know they were thinking of Vampire Diaries or The Originals, which is a spinoff of Vampire Diaries. They took themselves very seriously. Very, very seriously. It was a drama, and not supposed to be particularly funny.
Yeah, I remember that a lot from, because there's a few CW shows that I kind of liked, you know, and they take themselves very, very seriously.
Yeah.
Even when it's sci-fi and things like that.
They say, Liv is trapped in the pilot episode during a zombie virus outbreak that kills virtually everyone it touches. She survives, but not quite intact. She loses her all-American prom queen beauty, instead emerging as a castaway from a drug-addled goth hoedown. It's like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the style is very funny. And the cop nails it. He's like, What are you? Like, emo, goth? Like, he rattles off all of these things, and it's like, yes.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Whatever.
I want to be like, no, she's Gen X.
Okay. Yep. Variety didn't like it as much when it first premiered. Brian Lowry really kind of thought it was a little too like Veronica Mars, but with the heroine as a pale-complected zombie.
The writing is very similar.
Yes. So if you like one, you'll probably like the other.
Yeah, like the joking, the jokes, the way that they're even set up and spiked,
mm-hmm.
very similar.
And the very, very quick wit.
And it's not even just that. It's actually the direction of the main actress that I caught.
Mm-hmm.
The direction is the same. So her character, not very different.
That's fair.
I mean, she's different because she's a zombie.
Uh-huh.
But all of her facial expressions, the way that she moves, like the, you know, the cadence that she kind of embodies and the way that it's shot and she's directed is very Veronica Mars.
Yeah, that's fair. But they saw the opportunity for it to go stale pretty quickly, that it was really, they felt like it was just a police procedural. But that review was written after the pilot and maybe the second episode. So if you keep watching, it kind of you still get the procedural element. Every episode, there's a procedural element to it. But there's this mm-hmm. bigger storyline that is coming through about how the zombieism came to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like corporate intrigue and all kinds of stuff.
Ooh, how fun.
Yeah, it goes lots of different places. So we'll be right back after this quick break with Is It True? Psychology Break and Real Life.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you ever afraid to talk about something? Do you avoid certain topics, maybe with certain people? Like your racist Uncle Frank. Sorry, Frank. It's true. Do you want to learn how to have better conversations, increase compassion, and build bridges, not walls? We Don't Talk About That with Lucas Land is the podcast where we do talk about that with me, Lucas Land. Get it wherever fine podcasts can be found.
So here's how it works. Christy wrecks her search history. Hey, NSA, we promise it's nothing more nefarious than a podcast. To find out what's true, some of the psychological motivations behind the character's actions, and real-life applications that relate to our topic. I have no idea what Christy decided to look up. Could be the same thing that captured my curiosity or something I never thought of.
Is it true? So Ravi was amazed at Liv's slow 10-beat-per-minute heartbeat. So that got me wondering, what's the real heartbeat?
Okay, well, like, I might know this.
Okay.
I think I might be in the know about this. And I might.
Well, and I had a pretty good idea.
You probably did too.
Yeah.
So, but I have a heart condition-ish.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Your heart condition adjacent.
Adjacent. Uh-huh. So I do check my heart rate a lot. So, okay. Like, I know where I'm supposed to be and uh-huh. all of that.
Okay.
So, I'll be interested to see, though, what if I know is
oh, okay.
correct.
Well, tell me what you think.
Okay. Well, so, like, a good resting heart rate for me, if I was really in good shape, probably would be, like, 63 to 73, 75. It's typically not. Typically, about a 73 to 78, 83. All of that is within normal, though.
Okay.
Right? So up to 85, even normal. And then, like, a walking heart rate up to 105, 112 is fairly normal. Lower, the better. Mine's about 112 to 115 on a good day.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, that's yeah. pretty normal.
The Mayo Clinic says okay. anything from 60 to 100 for a resting heart rate can be normal. Good. Depends on the person. Just like with anything, any kind of condition, it could be different
yeah.
for each person. So 100 might be way, way too fast for some people, but it might be just right for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Daniel Green has the record for the slowest healthy human heartbeat.
Oh, what is it?
26 beats per minute.
No.
Yes.
He's a zombie.
He was 81 years old when he had this record. It was like 2014, I think. And he had been an endurance athlete.
Oh my gosh.
For like his whole life. He was a physical education instructor and an endurance athlete.
That's insane.
Yeah. And that it actually used to be higher than that. And the older he got, the lower it got. Like normally his resting heart rate was in the mid 30s, which is still
insane.
Incredibly slow.
I mean, I don't know how.
No, and completely healthy.
I mean, that means his heart is pumping and like the blood's circulating like 3-4 times.
Yeah, it's going whoosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like,
so Liv can only taste spicy food.
Yeah. So what'd she say? If there's like 6 chili peppers uh-huh. next to it.
Yeah. If it doesn't have 6 chili peppers, she can't taste it. A loss of taste function completely is called ajusia. Yeah.
Weird word. Okay.
Yeah. Which, it just means that you've lost all of your sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and umami flavors.
Okay.
Umami's new since I was in elementary school and yes. learned about the taste as part of learning about the senses. Umami is like the pleasant, savory taste.
Right.
Which I guess is like
all food. I don't mm-hmm. know. That's
yeah, like everything.
Yeah, all the things that I love.
All the things I want to eat.
Okay, wait, is that the same thing as the symptom in COVID?
Yes.
Or is it different?
Yes, that its causes are extremely rare. True ajusia is very, very rare.
Okay.
But COVID-19 is one of the things that can cause it.
Yeah.
Even with COVID-19, I think it's really rare.
Oh, really?
As far as true, complete ajusia. So there's hypojusia, which is a reduced ability to taste and smell.
So this is what she has, because she can taste.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as it's spicy.
As long as it's really spicy.
So I guess spicy just breaks through. Well, spicy does break through. It'll punch me in the face.
Yeah, well. So, but there are a lot of causes of hypojusia.
It's such a silly word.
It is a silly word. Upper respiratory infections, sinus infections, middle ear, poor oral hygiene can cause it, exposure to chemicals, surgeries of the mouth and nose area makes complete sense, radiation therapy for cancer, antifungal medication, antibiotics, some statins can cause it.
What about like a pregnancy, like when things change and things that tasted good, now you can barely taste and then things flip? Is that different?
I think that's different.
Okay.
I think that's a different sort of condition. And you can treat it. Some people have had success with smell training.
I heard about this.
Uh-huh. Where you have a very strongly scented, because if it dies, your nerve endings in your nose and your mouth die. they will often, usually, reform themselves. They'll mm-hmm. regrow. They don't always regrow where they're supposed to.
Right.
Yeah. So you might have, you know, your pink receptor in your nose goes to your pink spot in your brain, and the green one in your nose goes to the green spot in your brain. And maybe they swap when they grow back, and you can kind of fix that with smell training.
Right. You have to, like, relearn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like physical therapy for your nose.
Yeah. I think it was NPR had a story about the smell training. Mm-hmm. It's kind of super recently, because people are having, especially long haulers,
yeah,
are having to go through a lot of this with the COVID-19 retraining mm-hmm. to get their taste back and to realize that certain things aren't what they thought they were.
Right. Or they don't taste the same as they used to.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So,
and some people, they get it back pretty quickly. It's only mm-hmm. a week or two or a month.
Yeah.
And some people are... It takes much, much longer.
I can't imagine that. I feel like that would be so awful.
Uh-huh. I mean, there's a lot awful about it, but I think the one that might affect your life long term would be something like that, where you lose your taste, your smell. Like, the few, like, joys that we really have in pandemic life is
yes.
being able to eat things. And if you can't taste it, what fun is that?
Well, it's true. I mean, and then it changes your relationship even with people.
Yeah.
Like, okay, for instance, I mean, when your relationship with food changes and it changes differently than our spouses, there's a lot of work that goes into making all that happen.
Yeah.
So... It's just really, I can't even imagine it.
Yeah.
Not being able to taste.
No,
I don't either. Think it would stop me from eating, though.
I don't know. It might. But anyway. So being a medical examiner.
Yeah.
Ravi and Liv, I mean, they seem to have a lot of freedom. They're busy, but not so busy. But it's actually much, much busier. And they spend a whole lot less time with the bodies in a real medical examiner's office than they do on iZombie. So on Bright Side, a medical examiner who works in a morgue gave an interview and kind of talked about his Ooh. Work. Alexei Kupreyesin, he was the head regional forensic person in a morgue, pathologist and forensic medical expert. And he said he really liked the investigative aspect of it. Though I don't think he spent a lot of time with the detectives.
Probably not.
I
mean, not.
I think Liv's a special case because, A, they need her to get out of the morgue for it to be interesting television.
Well, yeah. Definitely.
And, you know, she needs to be around things that will trigger her visions.
Yes.
Because, you know, she's a psychic.
Well, and there's the partnerless detective who is
right.
the newbie.
Which is so weird.
I know. It's kind of
there
strange.
Should be another detective.
Yeah, but usually don't they have partners?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Sometimes people who become medical experts weren't well suited to be other types of doctors. So, for instance, Alexei said he really could not imagine working on a live person.
Oh.
That it was a lot of stress and pressure. And he would be really afraid. He's like, an injection's about as far as I want to go. it can be really, really hard to find nurses to work in the morgue, which makes a lot of sense. Medical examiners typically perform 300 to 400 autopsies a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, which is way busier than they'd like to be, that they really are short on medical examiners, that about 100 a year would provide a much better forensic situation.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
How can you know anything? We have to do so many autopsies.
Well, I mean, yeah. If you're going to have a malpractice lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
you have to have an autopsy to confirm the cause of death. If you know, there's a question as to whether there's foul play, they have to have an autopsy. There's all kinds of reasons why they really need to have autopsies, but it's an awful lot. But, you know, it seems like everybody who needs an autopsy in this morgue is murdered.
Yeah, it's all crime.
Uh-huh.
All of it.
They actually spend a lot more time in their office than they do with the bodies, writing their analysis and looking at lab results and things mm-hmm. like that. Their job can be really dangerous,
Ooh.
Which doesn't seem like it would be. But, yeah, there's quite a lot of infections from tuberculosis, plague, cholera, anthrax.
Eek.
All of those things are a potential
concern. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. He says there's no such thing as death from old age. Everybody dies of something. Old age might be a contributing factor, but
I guess I can see why that would be technically true.
Yep. He said you hear stories about people coming back from the dead in the morgue. But in his practice, he only saw two cases of this, which
only.
I'm like, only two?
Just only two?
Yeah, because two seems like a lot to me.
Me too.
He said both times it was an alcohol-induced coma.
Oh my god!
Where their breathing and their heart rate slowed.
Like to 10.
Very dramatically, yes. And they woke up when they sobered up and walked out on their own two feet, both of them.
Oh my gosh. That is out of this world.
Uh-huh. And you see Liv and Ravi eating by the bodies. Yeah, that really doesn't happen.
They
don't do that because there's a whole host of reasons. A, it's gross. B, it needs to be a sterile environment. They basically call it an operating room. They're operating on a dead body and they're making it sterile and clean so that they don't accidentally, you know, drop a fried shrimp tail or something in somebody. I mean, it's not a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Right. Well, he's eating the cereal over.
Don't do that.
You splash milk onto this person.
Yeah, and then if that's where you take the blood from, all of a sudden things are messed
weird.
Up.
Weird.
Yeah. In the show, the first episode, the pilot, there was a sex worker, and when she got arrested, she gave the name Stephanie Germanotta.
Okay, yeah.
That is indeed Lady Gaga's name. Lady Gaga is her name. That's her professional stage name.
Right.
Stephanie Germanotta is the name she was given.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she didn't officially change her name.
Right.
That's really just her stage name.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
so fine. her real name
that's
is Stephanie.
Her, yeah. But, yeah, if you don't know that.
Yeah, then you would. Yeah, if you don't know that, it'd be like, what? Yeah. That was hysterical. They're all singing Bad Romance in the at the detective who did not know that that was the real name of Lady Gaga. Yeah.
So the artist in the second episode, Brother Can You Spare a Brain, he was stabbed in the eye and his carotid artery was severed. I was like, huh?
That would be a very, very steep angle.
Well, it's possible. Only because there is an internal carotid artery that is accessible through the eye socket.
Oh, God. Really?
Yeah. So, like, you have your carotid artery in your neck, and there's one, like, up inside your brain that's also part of that same artery.
That same artery.
And has the same sort of capacity of carrying vital blood to portions. Not that all blood isn't vital, because it is. I understand that, but if you sever that one, it's a very quick process to die.
Right.
Yes. So couldn't a zombie apocalypse really happen?
I knew we were going to ask this question. I knew it.
So this article on Lewis Gale Physician's website, could a zombie apocalypse really happen? Pretty on the nose for my Google search. Thank you very much. the author says, while there's no reason to worry about the walking dead traipsing down your street anytime soon, there are real life illnesses that can simulate the fictional undead. These viral infectious diseases spread quickly and have been known to cause people to act in quite an unusual way. So rabies can cause people to kind of behave
like zombies.
Zombie-ish, erratic, bizarre behavior such as biting, thrashing about, spasms, delusions. Then there's sleeping sickness, which is found in southern Africa. And it's a microscopic parasite, the tsetse fly. And the later symptoms of it, when the parasite infects the brain, not infects, that's not really the right word, when they penetrate the brain, they start eating things, which is horrible. Poor motor coordination, confusion, behavioral changes, sleep disturbances. Then there's the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, mad cow disease.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense. And it can be up to 20 years before symptoms develop from that. So if you eat tainted meat, it could be quite a long time before that happens. And the early phase is psychiatric symptoms like depression, anxiety, memory problems, pronunciation of words. Maybe I have it because I'm having a hard time pronouncing words today. Then there's the middle phase, which is so they have a strange gait, which is kind of associated with zombies. Yeah. And then the late phase is muteness and immobility total.
So that's interesting because it begs the next question. Like, did our artistic representation of what we call zombies come from these diseases before we really understood them? Or is it a coincidence that we've created this artistic representation of what we consider to be the undead, and there happens to also be these diseases, and there's just overlap?
No, I think that there's somebody who saw that and was inspired by it. I don't know what is wrong with that person, but look at them. They're dragging their foot, and they're pale.
And they look like they just
don't speak.
Crawled out of the grave.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I think it's...
It really boils down to your definition of zombie.
Well, right. Exactly. And the iZombie kind of plays fast and loose with it.
A little bit. But he does tell her, you're not dead. You're undead. That's a difference.
That's right.
And he believed, like at least in the first couple, that it really was some sort of disease, parasite, something. Mm-hmm. And that's why he thinks he can maybe cure it.
Mm-hmm. All of the sources that we use to inform our discussion here on Killer Fun Podcast can be found on our social media. Join us on Facebook at Killer Fun Podcast, exploring the intersection of crime and entertainment. You can find us on Twitter at Killer Fun Pod, or you can send us an email at killerfunpodcast@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to share a link to whatever information you're looking for. We love to hear from you. You might learn a little something too. Psychology break.
Psychology break.
So kleptomania. Liv takes on some of the traits of the person who used to own the brain, which she eats. It's like a really intense form of mirroring. And so the first episode, the sex worker whose brain she eats in order to get visions and to keep her from not being a stereotypical zombie is a kleptomaniac. And that's a psychological disorder, an impulse control disorder. A lot of people think it's just shoplifting.
Yeah, no.
But it's not really shoplifting. So from the Mayo Clinic, it says, unlike typical shoplifters, people with kleptomania don't compulsively steal for personal gain on a dare or revenge out of rebellion. They steal simply because the urge is so powerful they cannot resist it.
Well, and they actually did a great job of representing it because she steals like benign little objects.
Yeah, and everything was red.
Everything too. Was red. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't help it, like the stapler. Like she just had to have it. Mm-hmm. Right? And like it means nothing, but she just had to take it.
She had to take it. And it's a lot of people with kleptomania tend to steal from friends or acquaintances. Mm-hmm. They also steal from stores, public places. It happens spontaneously, just like it was depicted in the show.
Not planned.
Not planned at all.
Which I thought was a really good continuity moment in the show because it actually is what pointed you away from her as being the culprit of the stealing of the ring.
Right.
That caused the murder.
Right.
Because she wouldn't have... That wouldn't have called to her. It wouldn't have been something that... Like something that valuable. It wouldn't... necessarily have been it. Right?
And it wasn't red.
And it wasn't red.
Yeah. Usually the person can afford to buy the items and they tend to not use them. Mm-hmm. They'll stash them away or give them to people. People tend not to seek treatment for kleptomania because they're afraid they're going to end up in jail.
Yes.
But we don't know the root cause. It may be a serotonin issue. We talked about this with the one where they have low serotonin, which is why low impulse control. Usually it's women, usually in their teens or 20s.
Is when it
manifests.
Yes.
Yes. If you have a first degree relative with some sort of obsessive compulsive disorder or a substance abuse disorder, you might be slightly more likely to have it. It's a risk factor. And very often people with kleptomania have other situations happening mm-hmm. in their mental health.
Right. There's yeah. a high rate of comorbidity.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about physical illnesses that can mimic zombieism, but then there's a mental disorder called Cotard's delusion,
mm-hmm.
Which is a very, very rare psychological disorder. It's so rare, it's not even in the DSM.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which means, is it a psychological disorder or an urban legend?
Right. We'll talk about this. They call it, it's very rare where people have a delusion that they're dead and that, like, or that they've lost their internal organs. It may be schizophrenia in some patients, and it may be diagnosed as schizophrenia in some patients. So maybe that's why the DSM doesn't include it, because it's a different sort of condition than just Cotard's.
Well, it may be that it's not a different condition. It's a sign and symptom of several different things that right. have delusional aspects,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's when the DSM-5 does not separate it as its own diagnosis.
Right.
Right. So if you have these other sorts of things, there's all kinds of somatic disorders, and that's mm-hmm. an entire category, somatic right. disorders, right? So, but this is not, if it's not classified as its own somatic disorder,
okay.
it falls under like delusions, you know, which would then come with other kinds of things, like mm-hmm. you said, like schizophrenia. Well, just several different other ones that you could have. And maybe even as part of a somatic disorder yeah. where you have a delusion, a body image problem.
Dysmorphia yeah. of some kind. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can have a inability to distinguish faces. Mm-hmm. And so they'll look in a mirror and not see their own face, or they'll look at other people and think they don't have a face and that therefore they must also be dead. There are a couple of examples from Journal of Neurosciences and Rural Practices. It usually happens in older people, and they had a couple of examples of it. A 65-year-old retired teacher had no family history of mental illness, and all of a sudden he started fearing that he had a deadly infection, and he was afraid he was going to spread it to other people, so he tried to commit suicide 3 different times, and then he believed that he was already dead, and so he refused to eat anything and lost a lot of weight, and he couldn't see that he was mentally ill. He didn't understand that, like, at all. And they, after 3 suicide attempts, they put him in some inpatient treatment. Mm-hmm. Smart.
Yeah.
It was successfully treated with bilateral modified electroconvulsive treatment, and that over the period of 7 weeks, it completely resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have a reoccurrence of it. And then there was a 62-year-old woman who was suffering from bipolar for 35 years. So she had kind of a different situation mm-hmm. where she had something else going on,
mm-hmm.
but she really thought she was missing body parts and that her family members didn't exist. She refused to eat. She'd be all rigid. Said she thought she was dead, but again, ECT helped her. And over the course of 8 treatments, it went away. And that it's thought to be more common in older people and women. But again, it could be a symptom of something else.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, if it's a type of delusion, right?
Yeah.
Then there's a lot of diagnoses that include delusions,
right.
including things like dementia.
Yeah.
Which is why you're going to see it in older people, right? And then, of course, certain diagnoses are more common in women, which include things like bipolar. And so you get hypermanias. And then when you have those, you have a predisposition towards other types of delusions and things. And so mm-hmm. you're going to see it more in women only because all the things that might facilitate a delusion in general, you're going to see more often in women. And women live longer, so we're going to get to dementia a lot first anyways. You know? Yeah, like, so it's just stacked against us, y'all. No, it is rare. And there are some other diagnoses out there where you lose your familiarity with your family. You think that they've been taken over. And it's really because you've lost the memory of their voice. You can't. Or their face, like you cannot recognize them anymore. Right. So you might see their voice and it's them, but when you see them, you're convinced that they're an imposter syndrome. And so, you know, there are certain interesting delusions out there, and it's really hard because the brain is so complex. It's hard to nail down where these neurocircuitries are going wrong. But this is where ECT is so helpful, is that we can't really pinpoint, oh, this little circuitry is off. We just have to fix that, but we can hit it, you know, targeted, but a little, you know, macro, you know, it's still targeted as far as we're concerned, but as far as the brain's concerned, it's pretty macro.
Yeah.
You know? And, but it helps to kind of start things refiring.
Yeah. Let's line everything back up.
Yeah.
And remind you that you're alive.
Hey, you know what? Everything needs a power cycle from time to time. When broken, turn it off, turn it on again. But ECT, people don't think electroshock therapy is happening, but it is. It's just a new thing. It's a new form of it.
Right. And it's much less problematic and dangerous than it once was.
Right. But that was because it was being misused. Right. We have more regulation that keeps people from being punished with it or overdone or experimented on outside of, but it is still the same sort of things. And then we have newer versions that are even more targeted.
Yeah.
We can even implant so that it continues to give like a small shock. They use this especially for seizures, Parkinson's disease, for tremors, things of that sort, where they inject a little bit of the electrode and it just continues to fire. It's almost like a pacemaker, but for your brain. And it will reduce seizure symptoms, and it will reduce tremors and things of that sort. It's really kind of amazing what they're able to do. And they even have started using it for things as more common, like depression.
Okay.
For major depression, it can actually really help as well.
Well, it can be a lifesaver.
Yep.
Because those people are more prone to suicide. Yes. So
depression is the number one risk factor. Well, having attempted suicide before is actually the number one risk factor, but depression is like the one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
All right. Real life. All right. So before Ravi was a Seattle medical examiner, he worked for the CDC, and he would not stop talking about the threat of biological weapons, and that caused him to get fired. But he was maybe right to be concerned.
Maybe.
So here's a little not so great tidbit from U.S. history that you don't learn about in school. Business Insider has an article from September of 2016 by Kevin Loria. Over and over again, the military has conducted dangerous biowarfare experiments on Americans.
Great!
Yeah. So they released a cloud of microbes in September of 1950 over San Francisco into the fog because they were testing how a biological attack would affect the 800,000 citizens. And they said that it was a benign sort of agent that they were injecting into the air, but they think it caused at least one death.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So, and of course they notified absolutely no one.
Of course not.
But that wasn't the first or the last time that they experimented on U.S. citizens without consent. Of course, there's the Tuskegee trials.
Oh, yes.
Yes, where they injected black Americans with syphilis, which is horrible and awful. And no wonder they're not super interested in medical things provided by the government. Don't blame them. In public hearings, the Army claims that they used harmless stimulants in their testing of biological weapons. But they're all considered pathogens now. maybe then they were harmless stimulants. They're all pathogens now. It's not great. And they did a lot of testing where they would spread bacteria and chemical powders to see how they dispersed across the country. And one of them was zinc cadmium sulfide, which is really controversial now. And they did this from Minneapolis to St. Louis.
Wow.
Yeah. Really not great. And of course, they did tell the people in Minneapolis that they did this over schools.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, really, really bad. They told them about it and they said that they were trying to test a measure to put smoke screens over cities that would make it more difficult for other countries to bomb those cities accurately. That's what they told the people.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they watched how it spread across the country. And it's really, it's so not great.
Wow.
And the whole article is really, really interesting. But biological weapons aren't new.
Oh, no. They're not new.
So, before the 20th century, the first recorded use of biological warfare, this is from Britannica.com, occurred in 1347 when Mongol forces reported to have catapulted plague-infested bodies over the walls.
Oh my gosh, that's so savage. I can use that word because it's kind of legit. That's pretty savage.
Yes.
That's where that comes from, is that kind of thinking, is that it's, word.
Oh, hey, look, we got a dead body over here. Let's fling that over the wall.
If I was under siege and I had plague bodies.
I'm turning tail and running.
Oh my gosh, I might be throwing over my city wall too. I mean, really, that and coconuts.
Yeah.
gosh, I mean, that's not unsmart.
No.
I mean, it's, you use what you got.
I mean, really. But it is savage.
It is
like no holds bar.
No.
All's fair in war, sort of.
Yeah, that's, but, you know, I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, we have so much technology now, you know, then, I mean, shoot, they had built a catapult.
Yeah.
So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The plague seems like a long haul game, though, because, I mean, it's got to get there and then they got to get infected. I mean, fires faster. Well,
yeah, fires faster.
Fireballs way faster.
Yeah, but if you're over, you're out of fireballs.
Yeah.
You don't have anything else to make fireballs with.
Well, now that's where the bodies come in. Maybe they were flaming plague bodies.
Oh. I don't know.
Just kidding. There's everything wrong with that.
There's things that we can kid about on this show that we can't get about with anybody else.
We really
flaming
can't.
Plague bodies or
flaming plague bodies.
I'm so glad, I mean, dear listener, you can understand us.
I know. It's been enough time too. Like, you know, like time has passed. We can laugh about this now. But yeah, only us.
Yeah.
Flaming plague bodies.
Yep. So the sex worker's body in episode 1 was found in a garbage truck, and that made the cause of death a lot more difficult to determine. And unfortunately, this does happen sometimes. In February of 2020 in Billings, Montana, a homeless man had an accidental death because he was sleeping in a dumpster and got dumped into a garbage truck and was asphyxiated and crushed in the crushing.
Oh, that's so sad.
So awful and so difficult and really hard on the truck driver. But
can you imagine?
Oh my gosh. But most deaths that have to do with garbage trucks are traffic related accidents.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. But sometimes an observant driver can be a lifesaver, literally. In San Antonio, where we are, just in December of last year, 2020, a homeless man was taken to the hospital after he had ended up in the garbage compactor because he was sleeping in a dumpster. And the truck driver heard the man scream and stopped the compactor, and they got him out, and he was okay.
Whew.
Yeah.
Meh. That's a loud thing. I mean, it's amazing he was able to hear that.
Yeah, yes, very loud, but I guess the guy was screaming quite.
See, dumpster's not a good place.
No.
I mean, I know if you're choosing to get into a dumpster, you're in dire straits.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's better places to even be in dire straits. Like, that is just risky. I mean, most dumpsters don't have it posted when their pickups are.
Right.
So, I mean, if they post it, that's what they need to do.
Really?
They need to post their pickup days, because if somebody were to just, you know, have need shelter immediately.
Yeah, I'm going to freeze to death.
I need to get, so at least they could see, okay, well, then I have a day or two.
Yeah.
Where, but I don't have to worry about in the morning.
Right.
That this is going to occur.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So, I mean, little things you can do, which sounds stupid. You're like, well, why don't we help them far more than that? But sometimes you got to start at the little stuff, right? And then build from there.
Yeah. But. Also, in the pilot episode, there was a meteorologist with a silly name, Johnny Frost. Are they stage names or happenstance?
I hope that one's a stage name.
Yeah, I'm sure that one was.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes both.
Yeah.
So Tree Hugger had an article about it. 16 meteorologists with ridiculous names. And they talk about how, you know, sometimes it's a given name that just happens to work with their chosen profession. And sometimes it's a stage name.
Yeah.
So let's laugh at some of the names, shall we?
Yes, yes.
Stormy Field, Amy Freeze.
Are these the real names, or the stage names?
I think these are all real names.
I would hope so, because I would hope you wouldn't choose something so on the nose.
Yeah, because the ones that are stage names are like Glenn Hurricane Schwartz.
Oh, well, so those they are call like them nicknames. Almost.
Hurricane Schwartz, right? Yeah, that's like a nickname. I almost. Think these are. If they're stage names, they're not owning up to it.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Sonny Haas, Dewey Hopper, Dallas Rains, Larry Sprinkle.
Poor
Larry Sprinkle on the playground.
No, that's not
I
okay.
feel so bad for him. And Ken Weathers.
Well, that, yeah. See, those are just kind of funny because they ended up in weather. And if they weren't in weather, it would have been far less funny, but
right.
Hopefully exactly. they're happy about they can like. Hopefully they can use it. You know, those are funny.
Mm-hmm.
Those are cute though. I like Dallas Rains. That's a pretty name.
Yeah,
yeah. But it's just kind of like,
yeah, like
precious. Just, yeah, it's a little precious.
Precious. That's a perfect precious. Way to put it. So Ravi probably shouldn't have been laughed at the CDC so much, because they really did create a plan for the zombie apocalypse.
Okay, I've heard about this.
Uh-huh.
I've heard about this.
Yeah. So it was super fun in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
With the rise in popularity of things like the Walking Dead comic book and mm-hmm. the television show and stuff like that, that they used it really as a marketing ploy
mm-hmm.
to get people to read their preparedness packet. So they really, it's for other disasters.
Like regular disasters.
Yeah. Like,
or even pandemics.
It could be pandemics. It could be disasters. Mm-hmm. Mostly what they focus on is disasters, hurricanes, mm-hmm. wildfires,
yeah.
different things like that. When you should leave, what you should have on hand so that you can shelter in place, different things like that. But it was just, it was really fun.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't have laughed or given Ravi such a hard time.
They really shouldn't have.
So in the second episode, Brother, Can You Spare a Brain, the artist's work shot up in value right after his death.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
And the guy makes the comment, the best thing an artist can do is die.
Uh-huh. So I wondered about that. I'm like, how true is that? And yet sometimes it happens. And as in the case in the show, he was a prolific and fairly famous artist while he was alive.
Right.
And an unexpected death can shoot up their work. Usually it's temporary. Artbusiness.com answered a question about this very thing. Somebody had bought some art from an artist, and the artist was getting older. And they wanted to know, should I sell now or should I wait till after they die? Is there going to be a spike? And they were like, that's pretty mercenary of you.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, I get it. If you're buying the art as an investment.
Yeah.
This it's a different sort of situation than saying, I just want to buy the art because I love the artist.
Right.
And I want it hanging in my home. But the overwhelming majority of artists actually live to be older. And you know their death is coming. Their output slows down. It's not, there's not a lot coming from them anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's not like their value is going to shoot up right away as soon as they die, because they live to be, you know, 89 years old.
Yeah. And
they hadn't put anything out for 5 years anyway. Really, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be an artificial high.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Don't think that the...
There's a great episode of Golden Girls about this. There's an artist that... And he's not a very nice person.
Mm-hmm.
He's a jerk. Awful, awful. And they meet him at the art show. And then Sophia, who is volunteering at the hospital, finds him in the hospital. And he's going to die. He has a disorder. And he needs a rare blood type to... Mm-hmm. And that's the only transfusion he can take. So they know he's going to die. So they go and they buy a piece of art because they're like, oh, it's going to shoot up and then we can pay for our new roof. And then the funny part is at the end, guess who had that rare blood type? Sophia.
Oh. And she saves him because she's a decent person.
Yes. And they lose their money. And then she does the whole, this crazy like deal with the roofer guy because like he's a fan. Anyway, the ending is very funny, but she saves him. And
yeah.
But the whole premise is that, you know, as soon as he dies.
Yeah.
You know.
It's going to mm-hmm. shoot up in value. Yeah, yeah, that's not really how it works most of the time. Now, that I would say somewhat accurately portrayed in iZombie, because it was a unexpected death. And you right. got to imagine the way the culprit, once they're found out, would have added to the mystique.
Yes.
Yeah, so still would have been quite exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Man, a lot of surprising, a lot of not surprising.
Uh-huh.
We thought about a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Excellent. Well, we've already talked about what we're doing next time.
I know.
So season 3, episode 1 of The Handmaid's Tale. It's been a while since I've watched this, so I'll be interested to watch it again.
Yeah, me too.
Then I'm sure I will binge the rest of the
yes.
season so that I can be all ready for
I need to be all ready
season
for
season 4. I think we're going to do the first episode of season 4 right after that.
We have to.
I mean.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be. Yeah, chomping at the bit.
Yes, me too. Because once I've seen it, I'm always like, oh, you know, it kind of cools a little bit after.
Yes.
You know, after a time, after you see the finale, you're, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, okay, I can wait for this.
Yeah, but no, I still remember the ending and I cannot wait.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very exciting.
Yep.
Anyway, all right. So until next time, be safe, be kind, and wash your hands.
Bum, bum.
Da 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 da.